The scripture reading is 2 Kings, 2 Kings chapter 5, 1 through 14. Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Aram, was a great man in high favor with his master, because by him the Lord had given victory to Aram. The man, though a mighty warrior, suffered from leprosy. Now the Arameans, on one of their raids, had taken a young girl captive from the land of Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "If only my lord were with the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy." So Naaman went in and told his lord just what the girl from the land of Israel had said. And the king of Aram said, "Go then, and I will send along a letter to the king of Israel." So he went, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of garments. He brought the letter to the king of Israel, which read, "When this letter reaches you, know that I have sent to you my servant Naaman, that you may cure him of his leprosy." Now, when the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his clothes and said, "Am I God to give death or life, that this man sent words to me to cure a man of his leprosy? Just look and see how he is trying to pick a quarrel with me." But when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, he sent a message to the king, "Why have you torn your clothes? Let him come to me, that he may learn that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his horses and chariots and halted at the entrance of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a messenger out to him, saying, "Go now, wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored, and you shall be clean." But Naaman became angry and went away, saying, "I thought for me he would surely come out and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, and would wave his hand over the spot and cure the leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?" He turned and went away in his anger. But his servants approached him and said to him, "Father, if the prophet had commanded you to do something difficult, would you not have done it? How much more, when all he said to you was, 'Wash and be clean'?" So he went down and immersed himself 7 times in the Jordan River, according to the word of the man of God. And his flesh was restored like the flesh of a young boy, and he was clean. This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you to Eric for being such a good sport and reading some very interesting words and names for different places and doing it on a whim. So I appreciate doing that for us today. Good morning. I thought maybe before I began, I would actually introduce myself and have you get to know who I am. My name is John Sweet. I am a chaplain over at the Eleanor Slater Hospital, which is down in Cranston. I also travel up north towards this way to Zamborano up in Burrillville. Anybody know about that one too? Oh, good. A few people know about Burrillville and Zamborano. So the two hospitals are connected. So I spend time in both of those places. And then I'm also a chaplain at Butler Hospital in Providence and the parish associate with Reverend Siobhan at Providence Presbyterian. So I have a little bit of time to watch a little bit of TV, maybe go to sleep, but not too much. So a little bit busy. Oh, and I have 2 kids too, 14-year-old and 11-year-old. So you know what my days are like. Kevin and I know each other just from when he moved here. We called each other. We have gone out for coffees a couple of times, and we served together as co-chairs for our CPM. So getting to know Kevin a little bit more in that way. And there is another way that I know about you, which I will share pretty soon. But it's a pleasure to be worshiping here with you today. And as I begin our process through this reading, there were a few words, and one in particular word was called offerings. Offerings that Naaman brought to Israel reminds me of the ways that we have also brought offerings and gifts to others that we may not know. And this is where I want to say thank you and know that this congregation has made many offerings to Eleanor Slater Hospital during the Christmas season. It's been a generous gift that has changed the holidays for our patients from what it used to be in the past. When I first started at Eleanor Slater almost 15 years ago, our Christmas consisted mostly of just gatherings and some small little token gifts that we were able to get with our patient accounts on Christmas Day. And for years, it was something that I witnessed, but I wasn't sure how I could make it a little bit more special for them. In asking those that had the powers to be, I received the standard answers that this is just what we have. If you can get the money, then go for it. And so, with a little despair, I went ahead and just went with what was being done. It takes my mind a little slow sometimes to process, but we may call it God's working, God's Spirit working through us. And I couldn't believe that I had never thought about it before, and I finally said one year, how about if we send letters to churches and to organizations around this state and find out who would be interested in helping with what we could call a giving tree? We see them out during the season for those that are away. And I got some of the standard answers of, well, I don't know that people will do that. Well, that sounds nice, but I think you're just reaching for something. So I tried it, and for the last 5 years, it seems to be doing well. Years, there are churches that decide to take a break and give other places, which is perfectly fine, and I think that's important to do. And it gives spaces for other churches that pop up and say, we would like to try it this year. We'd like to give. Your willingness and your offering has given our patients, just for a few moments on that Christmas day, a time of surprise, and I'll tell you why. Most of the patients that I work with are psychiatric patients, behavioral health patients. Sometimes their memories are not all the ways there the entire time. And so they don't remember that at one point they were writing down ideas of things that they may like for Christmas. So you can imagine that when the tree is here and the ornament is taken, they receive that gift, they open it up, and for a brief moment they're going, how did they know that this is what I wanted or this was my favorite color? It was that moment of being able to transform their experience and giving them some dignity during the Christmas season. It's amazing that they felt known. They felt people knew them. They weren't the unknown. Staff would say, where did this come from? Why is this even happening? As though they didn't even hear or remember that I wrote about it, that these were places throughout our state that have given back to our patients. They're amazed that they were known. This passage today has a few interesting pieces to it. And this isn't something that we usually preach on a regular basis. And it would be usual to just go ahead and overlook 2 Kings and go straight for the gospel readings or go for the New Testament readings. But 2 Kings has some real gems inside of its stories. There's places of talking about transitioning. There's places of welcoming change and feeling those pains of change and learning how to work with those changes. It has stories of people passing on from one to the next, of taking over, of leadership, of feeling not quite the place that I want to be to take over, but knowing that the Spirit, that God is going to help guide and lead. And our reading today is about Naaman. But it's a story about Naaman that couldn't be told without the unnamed or the unknown. Who are the unnamed and the unknown? And this is an opportunity for you to come and talk to me. So, who were the unnamed or the unknowns in this passage? Did anybody pick up on it?
The servant who came out of the house.
Right, the unnamed, the unknowns are those servants. It is that servant girl in the front that was Naaman's mistress's servant. There was the servant that came out for Elisha. Elisha didn't even come out on his own, but it was a servant. And it was the servants that encouraged Naaman to at least try it. Just go into the water and try it. Why won't you just do it? It was those unnamed, it was those unknown people that created this story to even be able to be told. It was their voices that encouragement. It was their voices that helped propel. Naaman traveling is in essence a foreigner. He's an outsider seeking treatment for an ailment that he obviously can't hide. The insider becomes the outsider and going about in a way that he knows how, by bringing riches and luxuries to offer for his services. Kind of like what we do when we want our best doctors or treatments or care. We figure the more expensive the treatment, obviously, the better it may be. But if we start at the beginning and we get an understanding of what we read, the opening verse begins and describes a very paradoxical type of character of Naaman. He is an Aramean, basically a political enemy of Israel. Yet it's clear that he won a degree of favor with God. He's a powerful general, yet he has and suffers from leprosy or some other kind of skin condition. We're not quite sure from the Hebrew what it is. And although he holds a prestigious military office with direct access to the king, he carries this physical affliction that has enormous social stigma. This leprosy is so overwhelming that it overshadows the rest of his personhood. And he's so desperate that he listens to a rumor from the mistress's servant of a healing prophet in Israel. Naaman appeals to the king for permission, goes to Israel, and seeks this prophet for healing. To get an understanding of what this may even look like, let's talk about the social context of this time, and it kind of helps clarify maybe a little something that's going on here. Ancient Israel was a socially embedded society. Goods and services were exchanged not for money, but it was for exchangement of social relationships. So the giving of goods to each other wasn't to gain things monetarily, but it was to gain things and to create and to keep relationships together. A farmer would share their crops with extended family because they were the extended family. Fishermen would share the catches with their clan or closest friends, but not for a profit, but to keep and maintain a relationship with them. The things that were important were the values and honors and loyalty were important to a society and not necessarily a prophet. So it makes sense that Naaman traveled down to Israel with an enormous cargo of gifts to present to the king of Israel. And these gifts were for trade, were not for trade. Instead, it was to create a social bond with their king. By creating this special bond through the gifts, it would then obligate the Israelite king to give hospitality, and in this case, find a cure for his leprosy. Kind of like our modern day healthcare system. If we pay more, get better insurance, then obviously we'll get better care and we'll get the better doctors. Seems to be about what is going on. But these gifts put the Israelite king in a bind. And if we remember, what was that bind that he was in? He was a little stressed out. He could not refuse the gift, There's the double-edged sword here. He could not refuse the gift, as it would be awful to refuse it. It would be like a new couple that got married refusing gifts that they received on their wedding day. "I'm so sorry, Uncle Charlie. I'm not going to be able to take that salad spinner from you. You can take it back." But by accepting the gifts, it would imply that he could heal Naaman, which he knew that he couldn't. He knew he couldn't heal him. And so the king would violate the required social responsibility that these gifts were doing. So you could see the sense that was coming into him, and he realized that there was some kind of confirmation. There was some reason they were doing this. And so he yells out, "What am I, some kind of god to give life or death, that this man sends word for me to cure him of leprosy? Look how he's trying to pick a fight with me." So he sees it as something that is keeping him in a bind and not doing what Naaman had thought. Thankfully, Elisha, who had just been given Elijah's mantle, intervenes and tells the king to send the Aramean general to the prophet. And in 9, we see this picture playing out of where a military division of horses and chariots park in front of the prophet's house. Not even Elijah would step outside, sends a person out for him and gives the instructions. "Go and wash in that Jordan River over there 7 times, and then you will be restored." Naaman had traveled miles to Israel for his affliction. He assembled the vast payment, and it was diverted from the royal palace to a house of the prophet. And now, when he's there, he doesn't even get to see the prophet, but somebody else comes out. And the instructions are very simple, very mundane, and seems kind of odd. So you can imagine that Naaman is angry, but it's much more of an anger that is masking a deep disappointment and sadness. One of our human natures of when we get angry, it really is all about our disappointment and sadness. He wants to just head back, but his servants that are with him push him forward and say, "No, just go and try it. What's the harm? Let's just see what goes on." I think about this piece right here, and I wonder, how is it able to translate for us today to kind of get a sense of what this may be like? And so I think of when there's stories, or if we think in our minds, a celebrity or somebody that's very well known, very popular, out there has amazing gifts and amazing luxuries that they could offer anybody for anything, goes to the best doctors at the most prestigious hospitals and says, "Cure me." And then once they get there, they go, "No." And then somebody whispering in the ears of those doctors saying, "Hey, go send them over to this little area in the city, you know, where nobody likes to go to. Go send them over there. Maybe a little place, you know, not too nice, but just send them over there, and then there'll be a person there that will cure them." And just imagine that traveling of a limousine with all the entourage coming down into this neighborhood and getting out and saying, "Here I am." And then the person saying, "Why don't you come out there and tell the person what they need to do. Go into that little muddy river over there, wash themselves 7 times, and then they'll be fine." You almost would think that they are doing that in order to make fun of the person. You can see that Naaman would be angry. But the people say, "No, go, see what happens. You never know what might happen." The servants gently persuade the general. The third time in this passage where there is a lower or weaker character giving wisdom to those that seem lofty. They gently persuade him. He does as Elisha's servant promises, and he is cleaned. And as we have talked about already, the power of Naaman's journey would not have been possible without several nameless, ordinary people intervening on his behalf. In Godly Play, the approach to teaching a story for children often asks the question, is there anything that you could take out of this story and still have this story? So without the young girl in Naaman's house who tells the mistress about the prophet in Israel, there is no story. Without Elisha's messenger delivering the message to Naaman that he should wash in the Jordan, there is no story. Without Naaman's servants saying, why don't you at least try it, there would still be no story. As much as we rely on medical doctors with expensive degrees and years of training, I'm imagining anyone that's been in a hospital knows that it's the nurses, it's the technicians, it's the phlebotomists, it's the cafeteria workers, it's the cleaning staff. Those are the ones that really create the healing. It's admirable that Naaman's servants stick up for him. And it's amazing that there are many gems that we mine out of this story. The ways in which we facilitate healing by working indirectly, having direct effect, just as I mentioned those other pieces in the hospital. Another gem is to nod to us that we may not even understand the impacts that we have in other people's stories as well. Who knows what our giving or our love or our encouragement, whatever work that we may do, who knows what kind of difference that it's made in someone in being able to tell their story of healing. Not necessarily medical, but our healings emotionally and spiritually. This church is an unknown, unnamed community to the story and the healing of the residents and the patients of Eleanor Slater at Christmas time. Our patients are at times way too sick to understand where things are coming from, but just that glimpse and that spark, there is a healing that happens of feeling known and feeling important by the givings that happen by unknowns. One of the last gems that I take out of this scripture reading is one that leads us into our time that we will be celebrating communion. The basic, the mundane, was made extraordinary and powerful in healing. Jesus took regular, everyday things like bread and wine and with words transformed them into an understanding of the healing powers that God is with us. Just like in the story that we see Elisha making those transformations with how the Jordan would wash and make clean. Don't ever underestimate your power. Don't ever underestimate your ability to impact somebody's life. Even if we aren't named as someone that did something, know that we are named by God. It's okay to be an unknown. It's okay to work directly, indirectly. Amen.